Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
To get to Ashley Banfield here to talk about what's going on the Derek Chauvin trial. You know, Ashley, of course, is host of Banfield on News Nation weeknights at 9 o'clock. And Ashley, a great program last night breaking down one of the defense witnesses' really compelling testimony. But let's start with the news here this morning that the defense has rested and Derek Chauvin not testifying. I guess we shouldn't be all that surprised. A lot of defendants don't testify. That is, of course, within their right.
You know, it is the biggest and most difficult decision in a trial for both the attorney representing the defendant and for the defendant, because a lot of people think that it's the attorney's choice. It is not. It is always the defendant's choice. Most defendants who are worth, you know, their weight in salt will certainly rely on the advice of their attorney. But, you know, this was the decision that I was waiting for the most, because Derek Chauvin's not like you and me. We, you know, presumably have never been in a courtroom if we're lay people.
Mm-hmm.
We have never walked up onto a witness stand. We've never had to endure the withering, you know, efforts of an attorney under cross-examination. And that can go sideways fast. But Derek Chauvin has. He was a police officer for many years. And so presumably he walked into many courtrooms and testified in many cases. So he is what you would call a semi-professional witness. So he's a little different than the rest of us. The Casey Anthony's of the world, I would, you know, you would really not expect them to testify necessarily.
Right.
But with Derek Chauvin, there was a shot. I personally think he should have.
Is it because he could have, I don't want to say expressed remorse, but talked about the training that he got, what he thought was right in the moment, maybe even show some sympathy for what ended up happening, which could give jurors at least give him some benefit of the doubt?
Yeah, well, I think for a number of reasons, that the factual issues of what was in his mind, obviously, because intent is a huge part of proving these charges, and then also who he is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all we know is that he's a mugshot and a picture on a cell phone camera, you know, seemingly carelessly with a hand in the pocket and glasses on his head. And then the narrative was everyone else's for a year. And even in this courtroom, we're looking at a man with a mask. We don't even get to see any expression, any humanity, any anything. I always say, and this is going to seem like I'm off topic, but I'm not. I always say in a death penalty case, it is unbelievably different to be in a courtroom and looking across the room into the eyes and into the face of the person, if you're a juror, that you need to condemn to death, right? It's different when you see them, feel them, hear them. They're people. They're humans. And I think in this case, Derek Chauvin could have used a big dose of humanity. He could have used a dose of reality and personality rather than, you know, let's use the word that is used all the time these days, a meme. He needs to be more than that. So in his defense, I think that would have been a good idea. However, these prosecutors are great.
Yeah.
They are so good. Jerry Blackwell is so good. So that I'm sure that was just a massive consideration.
Do you think that these decisions are made beforehand, or that they take into consideration the momentum or what happens the day before to, you know, if they felt like their witness yesterday did great, maybe they feel like they've ended on that note, and why spoil that with any potential cross-examination into Chauvin that could taint what happened the day before?
Well, that is an awesome question. And it's the most important question, in fact. Most people think that these things are all planned and, you know, neatly sewn up before you head into the courtroom and then you play out the plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. Most people will have plenty of discussions in advance of the trial about the potentials, the pratfalls, all the pros and cons of taking the stand. But it's usually a game day decision because, you know, trials are, they're dramatic for a lot of reasons. You hear new information. You see people in real time, real players saying real things that maybe you don't expect and saying them in certain ways. And then you also have an ebb and a flow. And the ebb and the flow can change witness to witness. It can actually change cross to redirect to recross to re-redirect, you know? And that's why it's like I hate to use the analogy, but it is almost like a sporting match because mm-hmm. a goal can be scored at any time. So the game day decision is often made with testifying because sometimes it's a Hail Mary.
Right. I'm so grateful, and I feel like every courtroom should allow cameras in and be able to see the whole thing in every state, because I feel like we all get to at least get some sense of what a juror might feel, although, as you mentioned, we're not there in the room. There's certain things that we miss. But I feel like a lot of people were saying, okay, well, the prosecution did a great job, but that weighted the trial this way. Well, the defense brought us some people. That's going to bring it up to 50-50, and I think a lot of people say, well, then where do we go? Even 50-50, if people thought that for a defense, would be huge, because really they're just trying to poke a hole big enough to get through that reasonable doubt standard.
That's exactly right. And I think many lay people forget that the defense doesn't have to prove anything. And in fact, all the defense in any case ever has to do is just poke some reasonable doubt into some of the things that the prosecutors have been saying. Now, here's the rub. When you have a panel of 12 people, what's reasonable to the guy way over on the left-hand side of the panel is completely unreasonable to the woman on the right-hand side mm-hmm. of the panel, and vice versa. So the poking the reasonable doubt is also a moving target, because you need to rise to the level of the reasonableness of each person that was impaneled. So that's another reason why you're probably seeing what you're seeing today, something called a rebuttal case. And you think, well, hold it. If the prosecution already went and then the defense got to go, why does the prosecution get to go again? Because the prosecution has the burden. And you'll see that in closing arguments as well.
Ashley Banfield, host of Banfield, thank you so much for stopping on by here today and really all week long with John Williams. It's been great hearing your analysis, and have a great day, okay?
So appreciate it. You too. Thank you.